I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
We can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show, just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 31. My name's Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
He's back.
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, they found me under the snow.
Yeah. How long did that take? How did you survive? Tell us about it.
Well, I ate snow weasels and drank my own urine for a good 2 months. And, you know, that's how it goes when you're an archaeologist.
Wow.
No, I was actually, I've been on vacation. I took a little vacation right in the middle of the busiest time of the year for me, which was a poorly planned vacation, but it was nice to get away anyway. I went to Istanbul and Athens for 10 days.
Very good.
So as soon as I get all the pictures edited, I'll put them up online somewhere, and you guys can check them out. But yeah, we have a special guest with us tonight. Besides me being back on the show, I feel like... I don't even feel like a co-host anymore. It's been so long since I've been on. But it's great to have with us tonight. We have Robert Dos Remedios. He's a former JC football All-American and currently serves as the strength and conditioning coach at College of the Canyons, California. He holds a master's degree in kinesiology, and he's also a CSCS. Coach Dos was just named the NSCA Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Professional of the Year. You can find his articles in Men's Health and other publications, and his book, The Men's Health Book of Strength, is due out in the spring of 2007. Welcome to the show, Coach Dos.
Hey, happy to be here, guys.
Oh, it's great to have you.
Yeah, huge, huge pleasure. I mean, I've been trying to get you on the show for a long time.
But, yeah.
You've been caught up with football season, so I'm glad you're able to jump on a board right now in December.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's good to be here.
But we'll just jump right into it because I know you guys want to get to the Q&A. First off, I just want to jump into some quick FitCast news. For the Insider, I'm doing an interview with Jim Labate this week. So for all you fitness marketers out there, it's going to be an interview that's not to be missed. And also, with the interview that I did with Smitty will be up this week as well. We had to re-record some of the audio for that as we had some audio problems, but that will be coming out as well. And also, I just wanted to mention that I know in the past we had Michael Roussel on, and he talked about EvoPro, which is basically it's the protein formula that they use in Muscle Milk, and it's basically just without with all the fat in it. It basically is just the protein itself, and I actually took the dive and I bought some of it. I bought some of the cookies and cream flavor and the chocolate flavor, and I must say I've only tried the cookies and cream so far, and I'm comparing it directly to the cookies and cream Muscle Milk, and it's pretty damn close. It's not as thick, obviously, but it still tastes pretty damn good in water, and it's... I'm going to have to say this. This is going to be huge news, but I'm sorry, BioTest, Metabolic Drive has been replaced.
Oh, geez.
And also...
Big news.
It's just... The only Metabolic Drive flavors I can take now are really banana and strawberry. Everything else has gotten old, or like we talked about in the past, they changed the chocolate formula, and I just can't choke that stuff down now. So, I mean, so far, cookies and cream has been... amazing. So
does it have the those creatines in it, the bad creatine?
Nope.
Stuff?
Nope.
Oh, awesome. Okay, cool.
So it's a little bit more expensive. It's $30 for I think it was a 2.5 pound tub, which is going to give you about 32 servings, about 26 grams of protein in a scoop. So if you double up the scoops and you throw that in like 10 ounces of water, throw it in a blender with 2 ice cubes, which is what I did, you get a fantastic shake, and it's just something I had to mention, although we don't do the shakes of the week anymore.
How do you spell that again?
The EvoPro, it's EvePro.
Yeah. our listeners.
Yeah, I just checked it out on bodybuilding.com. They have it for $30. You might be able to find it cheaper at somewhere like Bulk Nutrition. Check out that place as well, because they usually do a pretty good job with the prices.
You know, do you have a tub in front of you, Kevin?
If you guys want to wait 10 seconds to talk amongst yourselves, I can get one.
Okay, I got a question for Dose anyway.
Okay, go for it.
So Dose, speaking of protein and all this, the question's got to be asked, and for a lot of our listeners, they know that you are a vegan, and you're a big one at that. So how do you get all your protein, and what's your diet like? I mean, I guess you obviously you can't drink whey protein, huh?
Yeah, no, I usually kind of mix it up, and I alternate between just a soy protein powder when I make shakes and a pea and rice formula, like green peas, not like urine pea, but pea and rice. It's really nasty, though. I don't really like it, so I just try to alternate it because I try to vary my sources.
Right.
But I eat a lot, so I had this discussion one time, I think, was with Bill Hartman and Alan Cosgrove, and, you know, and I think my protein came out to about 20% of my diet.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Maybe 15 or 20%, but when I figured that out, it was like 200 grams of protein, because I eat so many calories.
Yeah.
So I think that's been the easiest thing for me, is that I eat so many varied foods and so much of it that I tend to get a lot of everything. So
right.
I think it'd be tougher if I was, you know, eating a 2,000 calorie day diet or something, but I'm usually in the 4,000 to 5,000 range most of the time.
Right. What's your weight right now?
I'm probably about 245, 250.
Jeez, that's huge. And yeah. How long have you been a vegan?
Gosh, maybe almost 19 years, 18 years
Wow.
or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right when I got out of college, I just kind of did it as a kick, just see if I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of did it for ethical reasons. And I thought, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, there's no way, because I mean, I used to love, you know, I kind of grew up steak and potatoes. My mom would make the best pork chops in the world. And I mean, I was an obese child, so it was like one of those things where I loved all that stuff. And then in college, I played it, you know, like 300 pounds when I played football. So I ate lots and lots of meat stuff and everything you could think of, basically. So I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought I'd be able to do it for a couple of months or something. And it was kind of easy. And back then, you know, like 1988, 89, there weren't a lot of these, you know, faux meats and stuff that they have now to make it easy, and it wasn't that cool to have vegetarian items on restaurant menus and stuff.
Right.
So it was more difficult back then. It's much easier now.
Obviously. Yeah, for sure. Well, it's amazing that you can get that much. It just goes to show that the little creativity, any of us can get their protein levels up. Us omnivores have no excuses for being protein deprived.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's just so easy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But it takes a little bit of with my thing. I've always had kind of bland taste, I guess. I've never really been in love with food, you know, as far as like thinking about eating a gourmet meal or something. It never really fired me up, you know. So it's always been kind of eat to survive kind of thing for me.
Right. Right. Well, Kevin, are you back yet?
Yes, I am.
But let me guess, there's no whey protein concentrator. It's
isolated.
Lower down on the list. Okay, it's isolate and probably some casein.
Yeah, it's got micellar alpha and beta caseins and caseinates.
Cool. You know, I feel like a chump, because all these years I've been like tasting different types of proteins. I knew the whey protein concentrate and isolate and caseins, and I know that the source of them and all this, but I never put two and two together and realized that I can't stand the taste of whey protein concentrate. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, because I don't know why I never pieced it together. I finally figured it out, and I was like, every protein powder that I hate the taste of, Optimum, always has concentrated in the first ingredient. You know, it's the cheapest. It's not necessarily bad for you. It's got a little more lactose than the others. It's just crappy tasting. And you mix it in your oatmeal, it gets all soupy instead of creamy like the others. So I have a new outlook on life. I'm going to filter out my proteins on the basis of who uses concentrates versus caseinates.
And I just wanted to bring up one quick thing. It's something that I've been trying to remind myself to mention every week. And I think, John, it was the very last show that you were on that this happened. And in the end of the show, we somehow ended the show on a fart joke. And do you remember that?
one of the many. I think so. I sort of remember it.
Okay, this is a little childish, but in the post-production, and I'm sorry to keep you guys listening to this, but I wanted to mention the post-production, I put in a fart noise into the show. And I just want to know if anyone picked up on that, if any of the listeners picked up on that. Because if you did, just send me an email, let me know, because I thought it'd be funny, but I thought I'd get a bunch of emails from people saying, like, you just made me laugh and I just dropped 400 pounds worth of weight on myself or something. I never got one email, so that's just go back to that episode. I don't know what episode it was. I think it was just John and I alone talking about some news, but go back and take a look out for it, and let me know. It was just right at the end of the show.
It's kind of like a Where's Waldo for the fart clip.
Yeah. We'll make this into a contest, all right? If you can tell me what episode that was and you can email it to me, I'll pick out one person out of the drawing, out of the hat, and I'll send you a free T-shirt.
Actually, you should make it the time on the episode.
Yeah.
It happened.
Thank you. We'll make it. I want the minutes and seconds on the show. So go back, re-download, or fire up your iPod and go back a couple of shows. It's probably about 6 weeks ago now, maybe, or at least 4 weeks ago.
You know, Kevin, I wouldn't be surprised if we got absolutely no responses to this. People don't generally spend their time listening to fart noises.
Hey,
I would miss it.
I mean, I spent maybe 10 minutes just going through different fart noises on the internet to pick one out. So I put a lot of time and effort into it. And sorry, I'm a college student and I laugh at things like that. So I apologize to everyone out there that couldn't give a crap. But we'll just end all that discussion right now and let's jump into the news. Our first story this week comes from the UK, actually, where, believe it or not, a McDonald's was shut down. It's really surprising where you still see multiple McDonald's popping up all over the planet. But there's a really good reason for this McDonald's being shut down. People stopped eating there. And one of the reasons was this town that it was situated in actually is a town that prides itself on its healthy eating. Believe it or not. And one of the things that, before I go too in-depth into the article, one of the things that really struck me is that what they do in the schools is they serve healthy, balanced meals in the high schools and the grade schools. Huh. Go figure. And what they said was, in one of the quotes, it said, children no longer needed to go there because they were being fed properly at school. Holy shit. Is this surprising to people?
I mean, it's great.
I think I kind of overreacted about this because actually for school I'm always doing stuff and I just sent a letter to my representative as a school project about childhood obesity and I focus just on the food in the high schools and it's amazing what the chain reaction could be just from children eating healthy while they're in school, how that can affect them outside of school as well. And I just thought that was something that was worth bringing up. But I think that's just great news. One McDonald's being shut down. Let's just hope it's the first of many. And it's up to you guys out there to make it happen. I know you're not eating there currently. But let your friends and family know and check the story out. It's definitely worth the read. Check it out on thefitcast.com. We'll throw a link, obviously, up there for it.
What I like the best about the article was the slogan, "We're not loving it."
Yeah.
McDonald's has the catchiest tunes ever. That their little radio. What do you call those things? Yeah, everybody
knows
that.
Come on, even I know it.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten there in 6 years.
And all the others try to come up with a catchy little tune that sounds similar, but it just reminds me of McDonald's. And like Wendy's has their little song before their commercials. It doesn't work.
Well,
it's all McDonald's.
Let me ask you guys this. Can you tell me what you think about when you think about Burger King now?
I don't know.
John, you haven't been watching enough TV.
Yeah, the king guy.
The creepy king.
Pounded. Yeah.
Yeah, the creepy king that's now showing up all over the place. And I actually saw kids at my school dressing up as this guy for Halloween. Because he has that creepy mask on that has that smirk. And you see him all over the place now. He even has his own Xbox 360 games.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was tempted to buy one, but I didn't. Because you have to buy a value meal just to buy the damn game. Which I was disappointed about. But maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll take a friend out to eat and I'll buy him a meal and I'll take the video game. We'll see what happens. But I don't know. It's just the advertising these days are getting nuts. And again, it's one more thing that's contributing to this epidemic, as many call it. So.
Well, let's jump into the second news article. I'll do the one on testosterone. Once again, we have a testosterone news story. We love these things. There's a group of scientists, I think it was the University of Austin. I'll double-check that. But basically, they examined men's testosterone levels before, during, and after competitions. And what they found was they showed why some men back down after losing a competition on the basis of their testosterone levels. And among the men who lost the competition, all of the losers, 70% of those whose testosterone levels increased at that point chose to compete again. So they wanted to get some more action. But 80% of those whose testosterone levels dropped declined to compete again. So basically, if you're a loser, if you lose a competition and you don't feel like competing again, that means your testosterone levels are dropping. Conversely, if you are more competitive after you lose, that means you have higher percentages of testosterone. And what they traced it to, the source, was cortisol. Basically, if you're all stressed out during a competition, particularly if you're stressed out when you lose that competition, then the cortisol acts with other hormones in your body to drop your testosterone levels. And coincidentally, not coincidentally, you will choose not to compete again. So I thought it was a pretty cool article. You actually found those in Kevin. So it was a nice little article you found. Good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, got to give out props to Dig.com. All these news stories I got off of Dig.com's health section, which shows you it's not just for random crap and technology news. It also has some good health stories on there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I remember times during competitions when, different times in the past where, you know, if I was on a losing team, I would be completely stressed out. Remembering back then, I was thinking, well, there goes my testosterone levels. Conversely, there are times when I was wanting to get back into the game. So I guess it's sort of a measure. Keep an eye on your hormone levels by your competitiveness.
Yeah, Coach, what do you think about this? I mean, you obviously work with student athletes. So what do you think?
That was interesting. I'm actually trying to click it up right now on the link you guys sent me because I wanted to read the whole deal. Real interesting stuff. I mean, it's fabulous, actually. I'm trying to pull it up. I should have done this earlier, huh? I should have done my research on your news stories here. I was actually, when you were doing the McDonald's ones, I was looking at the McDonald's ones because that was pretty amazing, too.
Oh, it was the University of Texas at Austin.
Austin, yeah.
Yeah, that was where they got the... Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I mean, what do you think in your athletes? Do you, I guess you don't really train them to be losers in the first place, huh?
Yeah, hopefully you hopefully have to deal with that, you know. They're winning only, so.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, it feels like in the years past, I mean, the most competitive thing I do these days is intramural basketball, but it does get pretty intense, and I am one of those kids that, if I'm losing, like I get extremely pissed off. I'm usually always angry at the end of a loss, or if it's a game that I know I should have won and we lose, I don't even want to talk to anyone. I could have like Michael Jordan on the sidelines, like I'll just give him the finger and I'll keep walking because I just don't want to talk to anyone at that point. And it's, I don't know, I thought it was just interesting read, and maybe that reflects on my testosterone levels, but. Definitely everyone should check that out. Like always, the links will be on the fitcast.com.
I think that one of my friends, who I used to play Monopoly with. I think he had the highest testosterone levels ever recorded. This guy would, like, talk trash during Monopoly. And he'd be like, burn, burn. And if he lost, he would, like, throw his dice across the room and, like, stomp out and, like, wouldn't talk to you for a week just over a freaking Monopoly game.
Good stuff.
Out of control.
Well, the last story this week comes from our good friends at Coca-Cola. And you know what? I think I've seen everything in the form of energy drinks and diet soda drinks, vitamin water, all that stuff. But now Coca-Cola has topped them all with a new version of Diet Coke that's coming out early next year that, believe it or not, is, I mean, you can do this with almost everything else. You can do it with dog crap, but it's going to be fortified with vitamins and minerals.
Oh, boy. It's a whole cycle, you know. They produce these nutritious products, and then they end up fortifying them, sort of like packaged oatmeal.
Yeah. Well, they put some green tea in it, too. I mean,
shares of Coca-Cola traded up 0.3% on the stock exchange on Friday.
Yeah, the news. I believe it. I mean, it's things like these that, I almost feel embarrassed to be part of American culture when I see things like this, and I know that people are just going to jump right on board with it. And it's really
right.
Sad. And it's, you know what? It's going to be 10 cents more than regular Diet Coke. So.
There's so many fortified vitamins and all of the crappy foods we eat anyway. I mean, it's just yet another source of crappy vitamins.
Hey, you know what? You could get a multivitamin. Just a thought.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is something that is worth bringing up. Rachel Cosgrove in one of the insiders interviews that we did, we were talking about multivitamins and we're talking about supplements that she usually has her clients take, and one of them is being a multivitamin. How you get people to take it is just say, oh, it'll help you lose weight, which is true. It helps with metabolism. So I don't know. People will just believe almost anything that they read these days, and I cry myself to sleep because of it at this point. And I don't know. It's getting tough when I feel like I'm going into this field and I don't know how I'm going to help these people. I just don't. But we'll see. I'll keep you guys updated. But that'll pretty much wrap it up for this week's news. Like I said, all the links for the articles are on thefitcast.com. So check out the show notes while you're listening to the show or after. But without further ado, let's jump into the Q&A. The first question is actually a question that I have, and that is, what steps did you take to become one of the best trainers in the world? And I'd like you to talk about from going from your college all the way to where you are today. If abbreviated, though.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll be here for a while. best trainers in the world, that's a bit of a stretch, I think.
No, man, there's
a lot of good trainers out there, I tell you. basically, you know, I came from, you know, playing football in high school and college, and I went to a community college, so one of the things that I kind of grew up with the gym rats in the city of Burbank down here in Southern California with some of these guys teaching me how to lift, and it wasn't until I transferred and went to Berkeley that I had a real actual strength coach who had his, you know, a master's degree in exercise phys and was a CSCS and all this kind of stuff, where he started to have me understand that this was a science, you know, and it wasn't okay to be doing, you know, 30 sets of tricep kickbacks and things like that. So it was one of those things where, you know, I learned from this guy. I wasn't even majoring in it. My undergrad major, I'm a history major. So what happened was I completely, you know, in my last year of college, I just said, you know, I'm just going to finish my degree and then I'm going to start prepping for a master's degree in a, you know, some kind of PE related field. So from that point, I went home and I started a graduate program in kinesiology, and it was completely new to me, and anatomy and physiology and all that kind of stuff was all new to me. So, but it was very interesting. So it was great. So I did really, really well in it. And school, you know, any school other than Berkeley is probably going to be a little bit easier. So even the grad school was easier than most of my undergrad work as far as the amount of work that they required. So I was really good, and I was able to start working with my old community college football team, and I helped out and put together a program kind of based on what we did at Cal. So just from that point on, I just kind of started going to conferences and going down to USC and UCLA and talking to those coaches and stealing ideas and bouncing things off each other. And I did a ton of visits and dropping by, and anytime I could do that, and I still do that today. I think that's kind of, you know, you need to do that in this profession is get out there and see what's going on and constantly try to, you know, tweak your programs and things like that. But I think I learned a lot, you know, from my strength coach in college, Robin Pound, and through the people that I met and through my, my organization, you know, being part of the NSCA organization and having great resources there. And it's a great organization to be involved in if you want to get into strength and conditioning, just because there's not a lot of egos in that like there is in private industry, and, you know, and so everybody's willing to help. Nobody's freaked out about you stealing clients and things like that. So, or stealing ideas for a new DVD or, you know, whatever it is. So I think I learned a lot that way, and it's kind of put me in the position that I am today. But I'm constantly tweaking my stuff. You know, I'm fortunate to live, you know, 5-6 miles away from Alan Cosgrove. We hang out almost every week, so I learn a lot from him. And he's obviously a brilliant man. And I've got to meet guys like Bill Hartman and Mike Boyle and Jason Ferrugia and learn from them. So I think, as far as where I am today, I kind of owe a lot to that. Plus, I'm really hard on myself, so I think, I don't go to bed and sleep well at night if I don't think that I did everything that I could that day with the teams that I worked with to get them better. So I think my work ethic kind of helps me, you know, as far as getting the respect in this field. But as far as, I did the grad school thing. I did my CSCS a long time ago and did my USAW deal. And, I mean, so, I've kind of prepared myself for that. But I think it's the constant kind of learning and questioning what you do and seeing what somebody else does and going to conferences and talking to people and things like that that makes us all better, I think.
Well, it certainly paid off since you were just named the NSCA Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Professional of the Year. Congratulations for that, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a really neat thing. You know, it was one of those things where I'd been a finalist for 3 years previous, and I never expected to win it because it's all, you know, I'm the only commute 2-year college guy to ever win it, and you've got, you know, legendary guys that are on this list. Like, you know, the first guy that ever won it was Boyd Epley, the legendary, you know, strength coach, kind of the father of it all at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And the last guy is me, so we're the bookends, so there I am. So I feel pretty good about that.
Nice.
But it's a great recognition because it's only in the NSCA, this is one of the awards that only the collegiate strength coaches can vote on. So you can't really, it's hard to be a popularity contest, you know, because,
right,
you know, you can't have regular personal trainers and stuff can't vote on it. So
very cool. Well, our second question is from Gene, and the question is, what in your opinion is the best way to learn/perform O-lifts when you don't have bumper plates? The second part of the question is also, what complementary exercises could help with technique development, and do you think it would be, you think it would help to perform the O-lifts with dumbbells?
Yes. No, I think the clean and snatch pulls are probably the most underrated Olympic exercise. I know that I talked with this about this years ago with Alan Cosgrove, and he's to the point where he doesn't even perform the full Olympic lifts with most of his clients unless they're already doing it really, really well, because it just takes so much time to learn how to catch the bar. And, you know, if you have he trains a lot of motocross riders and things like that, and they have no ability to open their fingers and get their wrists in that flexible position to even get in a front squat. So he can't teach him catching and things like that. And the point is, you know, we're not doing it for the catch. We're doing it for the quadruple extension, basically, you know, the power production. So I think that's probably the best thing you can do from top to bottom. If you do anything, if you don't know how to teach them, it's a really easy thing to teach. You know, it's like an explosive deadlift, you know, with just on your toes at the shrug. So, and it makes it tougher when you go to a snatch grip with a wide grip. So I think it's a really underrated. I think that, you know, I use them all the time. I use them with our cross-country athletes and things like that I don't really have a lot of patience for to teach them. So, but they're in there and they're able to get their Olympic lift variation in for those workouts. Right. As far as the bumpers go, I would say try just doing things from the hang position. So you don't have to drop the bar if you can. You know, it's tough when you go really heavy, especially if you catch it and open your fingers up and things like that. If you're doing like a hang clean, you wouldn't want to drop that. But I know when I go to my gym, I can't, you know, it's a nice, you know, chrome plated kind of place. And I do hang cleans and things like that with a lot of weight, but I hang on to the bar. The other thing is like narrow grip snatches, where you don't have to drop the bar so you can actually bring it back down, you know, because you don't want to bring it back down with the wide grip. So I'm doing a ton of that. You know, I got that from Mike Boyle. He does a lot of the narrow grip snatches. And as far as the dumbbells go, absolutely. I love single arm dumbbell snatches from the floor, from a hang. Dumbbell power cleans are great as long as you have dumbbells that have like a flat end on them, if you know what I mean. Like some dumbbells are, they have like a round end, or like the ones I have in my garage, they're the ones that I can adjust so they have the Olympic end on there, so you can't rest that on your shoulders.
Right.
So if you have like the set dumbbells that you're at a gym or something like that, and you can grab 70-pound dumbbells or whatever, and you can catch it so that your elbows can be up and you can lay them flat on your shoulders, those are great for you.
Like the ends are shaped like a pentagon, right? Or
yeah, yeah. It's just got to be flat. Sides. Otherwise, it's going to stab you, you know, when you try to catch it or hit you in the neck or something, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, they're great. I mean, I can't tell you how often I vary. We may do power cleans from the floor and not do them again for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, because we'll do a different variation from a hang, or I'll do a split hang clean or dumbbell cleans. So we just do tons and tons of variations because our athletes are able to do that because they do it so much. But if you're in a situation with the bumper plate deal, pulls are great and just kind of control it back down to the ground or back down to, or even a jump shrug from a hang position. Those are great, great exercises. And you take a picture at the top of the pull and it's exactly the same thing as you're going to get when you're going to, you know, if you're going to go into the catch. So, which is the most important part, obviously.
Absolutely.
Well, the next question, or questions, I should say, come from Carl. And I'm doing this as a favor for Carl, because as many of you might remember, we had the first FitCast challenge, which was the Velocity Diet. And only three people finished the diet. All right, and this, and you gotta give it to him. This is some hardcore stuff. And Carl finished it, and actually, the people that completely did it, and he did everything. He posted the pictures, and he had some great success on it. So, Carl, just great job on that. We hooked him up with a free FitCast Insiders membership. So, that's definitely one reason to check out future FitCast challenges. And I know, John, you're working on one.
Yeah, someday I'll have something ready. It's hard to compete with the lineup you have, though. I feel like a poser, you know? You got like world-class strength and conditioning coaches, and then there's me.
Yeah, I mean, it's we'll have something for you in the future, and check out the FitCast forum for more on that. But anyways, Carl's question. He has an athletic 14-year-old daughter that plays volleyball, basketball, and cross-country for her school. She's in the 8th grade. She also has played soccer year-round for the past 7 years and has her mind set on playing soccer in college. He has 3 questions. At age 14, is she too young to start weight training for her sport? I'll let you start off. We'll do one question at a time.
Okay. First of all, it never ceases to amaze me how many sports some of these kids get into.
Yeah.
And it really, the more sports, I'm all for that, you know, totally. I think especially at that age, you need to be doing a lot of things. I have a niece that for a while I was worried about because she was so playing this year-round softball, and it was, and she wanted to play volleyball, but it, you know, her travel ball would interfere with it, so she couldn't. She wanted to play basketball, but she couldn't. So she finally eased up on it and was able to do all those things. So it's great that his daughter's doing all these sports. The difficult thing is, obviously, you know, there's no real off season because when one season ends, another season is going to start. So you don't have any off season weights or conditioning kind of modes to, you know, like cycles to go on. So that's the tough part. as far as the cross country thing, also throws a wedge in there too. Some people will think that that's really, really a great thing to be a soccer player and a cross country player, but you know, we know from research and from science that you know. It's a pretty anaerobic sport, soccer. I mean, you're doing a lot of walking, a lot of resting. So the thing that concerns me sometimes when you have an explosive athlete that's a volleyball, basketball, soccer player, and then they're also a cross-country player, sometimes I worry about that depending on how much mileage they put in, if it's going to kind of, you know, tamper with their muscle fiber makeup or so forth. But is she too young to start weight training for her sport or soccer? I'd say no, only because I like to say we've all seen the 14-year-old kids that look like they're 20 and the 14-year-old kids that look like they're 10. So I think when I look at it, when I look at an athlete, I look at it more from a, like a physical development standpoint more than just a chronological age deal. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you could have the same thing in high school, you know, a 16-year-old football player, and then you can have a 16-year-old kid that's ready for the, you know, the NFL, you know, or going to start in college the next year at a Big Ten school or something. So it's there's a lot of range there. Generally, I'd say absolutely, you know, I would expect you want to start to do something organized, something, some kind of comprehensive conditioning program with them. Like anybody, you know, that knows their stuff will say, obviously, you want to make sure that you're doing a lot of body work, body weight stuff with her. You know, you don't want to externally load until you're able to handle your body weight. And for female athletes, I like to do a lot of body weight exercises in general because they just don't have a lot of strength, especially upper body, like chin-ups and push-ups and, you know, single leg squats and a lot of core work and things like that. So you can do a ton of stuff before you even start to incorporate weights. So is it too early? No, actually not. I think they should be involved in it. And I'm still amazed at how terrible some high school programs are that don't even have anything in place, you know, that are competitive, competitive high school football programs or basketball programs or volleyball programs that don't do anything. So, and they just kind of rely on the athletic, you know, ability of their kids. So yeah, that's it's probably a great time for her to start. As far as training for soccer versus volleyball versus basketball, I'm actually speaking on soccer conditioning in San Antonio in about a month at the NSCA Sports Pacific deal. And one of the things I do is I put up five different workouts, and I say pick out my soccer workout, pick out my football workout, pick out my basketball workout, and nobody can ever do it because they're virtually the same. So I don't think that you have to worry too much about training specifically for soccer, you know, with the, especially with a 14-year-old at this point. But yeah, I think she's ready to go. I would just be, you know, make sure you're set up with a good program, obviously.
Okay, well, that partially talks about our next question, but we'll jump into it. What type of weight training routines would you suggest, and how would they change or progress as she gets older?
Yeah, like I said, I do a ton of body weight exercises. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't handle your body weight, you know what? If you can't do a set of 10 good solid, you know, Bulgarian split squats with your body weight, why are we going to try to grab dumbbells? You know, it's just kind of silly. So, as far as what types of routines, you know, I'm a big Olympic lifting fan. You know, so once we start getting to the point where we start to externally load, I think I've got a couple handful of exercises I think are key. I think full front squats are the best exercise on the planet. I don't think there's anything that can match it as far as how many muscles it's going to hit, what kind of stress it's going to place on your body. And especially if you're going to do Olympic lifts, it's going to set you up great for catching the bar and things like that, or doing combination lifts. So I think that's great. I think another thing is with females, it's awesome. I love training female athletes because they don't have the same baggage as the males do. You know, there's no egos, there's no bad habits. They're not bench pressers, they're stiff. So they end up all, I'm telling you, I can go through my computer and pull up clips that I've saved over the years of good, you know, squatting, good push presses and jerks and split cleans and things like that. And they're always females. They're always girls. It's hard for you to find a single clip of one of my male athletes on there because the females are just so much better at doing them as far as from a technical standpoint. But I would go, you know, base it around Olympic lifts, a lot of front squats, a lot of unilateral work. The way I set up my workouts, and this is that I did this for the Book of Strength book as well, is basically, you know, you were either doing like some sort of push pull deal or a full body workout. So we're also going to alternate, you know, if I'm doing say a vertical push. One workout I'm doing it bilaterally, next workout I'm going to do it unilaterally. And it's just as simple as doing barbell push press and the next time doing dumbbell push press instead, you know, just to make sure that we're kind of, you know, targeting the unilateral aspect of our bodies. I don't back squat anybody. You know, I don't know if that's controversial or what, but I know Mike Boyle does that. He wrote the foreword in my book. It was just a coincidence that we both do it because I didn't know that he did that after I got rid of mine. But I just think that they're like the source of all evil that we've ever had. yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I could give you a zillion examples if we have time, but if you, I'll just give you one example. You make a kid do a full front squat, and you make a kid do a full back squat, and with the same load, and it's going to look totally different. Mm-hmm. You know, the torso is going to lean forward. 90% of the time, they're not going to go as deep mm-hmm. on a back squat as they do on a front squat. I don't know why, but it's just this weird comfort zone thing, or they want to roll it down their backs and get in that powerlifting position and shorten the levers. And I'm just, you know, and it was a real ego thing with our male athletes, and the heavier they go, the less depth they get, you know, that kind of thing. So we just threw that out the window, and now we have real 500-pound, you know, full front squatters and things like that instead of these fake, you know, back squatting guys.
Right.
But in a nutshell, full body workouts, Olympic lifts, lots of core training, lots of rotational training. Have a plan of action in terms of laying out your training cycles as far as your, you know, sets and reps and stuff. Some sort of periodization. You got to do something. I'm not into all the gimmick stuff that's out there as far as, you know, the crazy tempo stuff and the weird rep volumes that don't match the loads. You know, I don't know, like overload principles is the first and foremost thing that we should all look at. And if we're doing a set of 10 with a weight that we can do for 20, then you were just wasted a set, you know? So if we're doing a set of 10, you know, my thing is you're going to pretty almost fail at the 10th rep or as close to it as you can. So, just things like that. And what Alan and I kind of coined was a phrase called alternating linear. And it's not an undulating, cycle where you're going to change up every workout or even every week, but every 3 weeks or so, we're going to change up and, you know, go from a strength kind of based one to a hypertrophy one and to a power one, whatever it is. So, I've always been a linear guy for years and years and years, and it's always worked really, really well. But, I like the alternating linear, and that's working well with our groups right now.
That's awesome. Well, we'll jump into the last part of his questions. Are there any resources such as websites or books that you would recommend for her to use in reference?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm a big Mike Boyle fan. I think Mike Boyle's kind of guy you either love him or you hate him. But I'd recommend his functional training for sports book. I think that's a great, easy read for anybody. For learning the Olympic lifts, I would recommend Explosive Training for Sport by Harvey Newton. It's a great book. It's, like I said, very concise and very to the point. It's easy read. Another great thing to do is get online and go to some of these collegiate websites that have all their exercises, you know, and the video clips of them to go along with them. And I actually just met a guy named Jeff Oliver, who's the head strength coach at Holy Cross. And he has a website at Holy Cross, and they've got – it's great. I've actually stolen a bunch of stuff from him, borrowed, stolen, whatever. And especially as far as his mobility stuff and his warm-ups that he does. That's great, great, great stuff. And that website is it's goholycross.cstv.com. Or if you just Google Holy Cross Strength Conditioning, that you'll be able to pop that up. Another great site is a coach named Greg Warner, who's at James Madison University. I think it's just jmu.edu. And you can get on there, and he's got tons of video clips. But maybe the best one is up here in Northern California, the University of Pacific. It's pacific.edu. And if you just search strength and conditioning on there, you'll get their strength coach stuff and all their exercises on video. So it's a great thing. And he even has a whole progression, teaching progression for how they teach, you know, the power clean and so forth. So it's great. I think Alan Cosgrove's got great articles on his site because he posts all the ones that he does all over the place. And the guy writes for a zillion different websites. So you get all that if you go to his site. And then I think his blog is about as good of a blog as I've ever seen. I just started reading blogs. I think they're kind of addictive, you know. But if you find the right ones, you know, I think with his, that's the only one I go to now. So, and last time I talked to him, it's like huge, it's huge. Like there's a little blog search where you can see how many hits you're getting and stuff, and it's ridiculous how many he's getting on there. So it's good for him. But yeah, those are some basic resources as far as simple books, and then learning. You know, when you go to the collegiate sites, they're not able to the Division I schools, they can't put down their programs as far as their the way they lay it out exactly in their sets and reps and stuff like that. It's a NCAA regulation thing. So they have, like, if you get to programs, a lot of times you'll click on it and it'll say type in your student ID number or something. So don't expect that. It's not like some kind of pay-per-view or something. It's just the rules. But some of the smaller schools, like lacrosse and stuff, a lot of times they'll post them on there because they're allowed to, I believe.
Excellent. Well, we got one more question from Ian, but before that, I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit more about the concept of not using back squats and using front squats instead. I hear you about the ego thing, and I'm sure that's a huge deal with back squats, and that's my reason probably too for doing back squats over front squats. One thing I did notice, and I could probably get some tips from you while we have your ears. When I do front squats with significant weight for me, which is puny for most people, I tend to bruise my shoulder, my collarbone. I'm sure it's resting on there incorrectly. I tried to put it a little more on my shoulders, but it's just kind of hard to keep it there. I think my flexibility is lacking, but what do you think about that?
It could be. We might just have to put more meat on you, I guess.
Yeah.
On your collar.
Sure.
But are you using like a clean grip, or are you doing a cross hand grip or anything on there?
It's a clean grip.
So the one thing I maybe try to mess with is mess with the width of your grip. A lot of people, it's funny that a lot of people that have a hard time getting their elbows up and getting it to really rest on their shoulders, you know, where the meaty part of their delts.
Right.
First of all, if you get your elbows up higher, it makes, you know, it's going to make your delts push up higher.
Right.
But a lot of people put their hands wider thinking it's going to be easier, but it's easier when you bring them in closer. The closer, the easier. So I would try to maybe play around with your grip a little bit.
Yeah.
And see if that helps. But other than that, you know, I think sometimes that happens. We have some female athletes that just, man, they come out after they do their cleans or their front squats, and they're just, they've got that they're just red. It looks like, you know, somebody's been slapping them across the neck or something.
Yeah.
From that bar rest in there, even when they're trying to kind of shift their weight around so it's on their shoulders more. But yeah, it's definitely a tough thing. You're not going to get 100% of the people to be able to do them. That's the hard part with front squats, is that, so we use the straps, and as a last resort, I'll let them cross their hands if we have to.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, we probably get about 99% of our kids be able to do them right. But, you know, without, they're going to be uncomfortable no matter what. It's a horrible exercise.
Yeah.
But that's obviously why they're so good. So I think they're the best thing on the planet.
Well, what about the guys who, you know, have spent considerable time under the bar and they've avoided front squats for the most part for whatever reason, and they're back squatting, you know, 350 pounds or 400 pounds. For them to drop that much weight to switch to front squats and lose that much load, do you think how do you convince those guys to switch to front squats?
you probably don't. That's the thing about habits, you know, and guys and egos and, you know, telling a guy to do his bench press and then make him have to do dumbbell variations or make him have to change his grip and do close-ups when he hates it. That's the one thing I do when I set up the workouts for the book is we never even bench, even with football, we never do regular bench press two workouts in a row. So they'll do a bench, or they'll do a close grip incline, or they'll do a dumbbell or a one arm dumbbell. And I think that helps us, as far as they never really have this ego that, oh, I've been training for 3 weeks getting my bench up, you know, because they haven't, because they've been doing all right. These different variations, but yet their bench keeps going up. So I think that's a way to do it. But I kind of get those guys early on, you know,
right.
Like you're saying, somebody who's experienced, who's a gym rat, who loves to do back squats and things like that, and puts the bar and he can't hold it, or it feels horrible, or he drops 200 pounds on his numbers. But that's understandable too. It's going to happen. You know, you're going to get stronger at those front squats once you do them. It's just got to be, you know, most guys don't have that patience though.
Right.
The ego thing is, I know exactly how it is. I mean, I used to be a 500 plus pound bench presser. I can't come anywhere near that now. So I absolutely hate doing regular bench press. I hate having to use this little bit of weight on there that I used to be able to do, you know, 100 times. And now I'm trying to do sets of 8 with it or something.
Yeah.
So but I do it because I know it's good for you. But I'll vary it, you know, with a different grip or incline or dumbbells or one arm, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But that's a good example of the ego right there. The ego is really difficult. It's like pulling teeth trying to get me to bench press. It really is.
For sure. Sounds good. Well, our last question is from Ian, and he writes, how much cardio would you put into someone's program who already lifts about 3 to 4 times per week and whose goal is fat loss?
Yeah, it's like a Cosgrove question right here. I tried to convince Alan to come on tonight and help me with some of these ones if we had any of these fat loss transformation things. He's at a baby shower right now. He couldn't get out of it. I'd say the first question is, what type of lifting are you doing? You know, if you're doing total body stuff or you're incorporating Olympic lifts or some kind of supersetting or complexing, things like that, short rest periods, then obviously I'm going to say you don't need as much because you're going to get a lot out of that. But if you're doing the traditional kind of slow paced stuff, then I would always recommend doing some cardio. Now, you know, that's there's always this, I don't even know if it's a debate anymore as far as when you do it, at the beginning or the end. I love to do my cardio before I do my weights. And part of that is because I really don't care about the numbers that much. You know, if I'm going to lose 10 pounds on my front squats because of it or 10 pounds on my cleans, I'm okay with that, you know. But I hate the way my body feels when I run or do intervals or something after I've done weights. I'm shaky. I don't feel good. So for me, I like to do it at the beginning. And so my thing is, whether you want to put it at the beginning or the end, number one, it's going to depend on what the intensity of that workout was like as far as how what kind of pace you were pushing and so forth and what you were doing in your actual workout. If you're doing a bunch of single joint stuff, then yeah, you better get on the bike or the treadmill or something and do some intervals. But I like to prescribe some form of cardio each session that you're going to be in there. And if you're doing like a 4 day a week, I would do something each time, or at least match as many days as you are doing the weights. So if you want to do it on off days or later in the day or whatever, it's up to you. But I kind of wrote this down because I thought, most my population is not the same population as all these other guys. Obviously, you know, I've got athletes, and I don't really do. I used to do personal training many, many years ago, but I don't do that anymore. Just for myself, though. You know, I like to when I say cardio, I like let me qualify that. I like to do interval training, like on a treadmill. You know, little 12-minute session of high intensity interval stuff. You know, spin bike stuff. If you got a good spin instructor that does intervals, and you don't have this 86-pound female that wants to stand and run on a bike for 5 minutes, that stuff's good. It's really good for you. It just happens to be a long time. I wouldn't sit through the whole class if I were worried about getting bigger or strength is your main goal or something. But I recently had a fitness challenge on our campus. It wasn't on our campus, it was in our PE department, and a bunch of coaches had this thing where they threw in $100 and they wanted to do this little transformation thing, and I think it was an 8-week challenge. So all these football coaches, throwing their money and I can lose so much weight and this is finally going to give me the kick in the rear to do this, you know. And one of the younger coaches, one of our offensive line coaches who I'm friends with, he's a 6'6", 245-pound guy who was already maybe only 12-13% body fat already. So that was the biggest challenge, and everybody thought he was done. Well, he killed everybody in the challenge. And what we did was he did a 4-day-a-week push-pull deal, high intensity, and with just like 10 or 11 minutes of treadmill intervals to start the workout, because he was the same way as me, like to do it before. And we would just do intervals, either speed intervals or keep the speed constant and change and go to a really, really steep incline and do, a minute on or 30 seconds on, whatever the intensity was. And then, we'd go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday with weights and do that little cardio each session. Then on Wednesday, he would come in and do what I call cardio strength training. So he would come in and pick out 2 weight complexes. You guys know complexes, right? Mm-hmm. So, he would pick something like at least 3 exercises and do a complex, usually 3 or 4, a 3 or 4 exercise complex, pick 2 out, do 3 to 4 sets of them, and then pick out 2 things that he was going to run through Tabata cycles with. So it was pretty intense little session, but he was in and out of there, in about a half an hour. So, and then he liked to do this spin class on Saturday mornings, and he would do it for about 30 minutes because he wouldn't want to sit in there any longer than that. And he just destroyed all these guys that were losing tons and tons of weight, but his body fat went down to he went from 13 or 14%, I believe. He lost about 10 pounds, but he dropped down to 8 or 9% body fat. And he got really a lot stronger. And I mean, physically, he just looked like a totally different dude. So I think that that worked. I mean, obviously the diet, you know, we talk about that, you know, we haven't even talked about that, but it's got to be about 80% of the equation. But he did a real good job with his diet and things like that. But I think, you know, I don't like the long, slow cardio aerobic stuff. I mean, nobody does anymore, right? I mean, it's almost like, can you imagine somebody saying that they do like that now? You'd be like stoned, you know, like the internet world out there. But so I like to get in there and get as much bang for your buck. My whole thing is, when I train for myself, it's obviously for fitness sake. Now, I don't really care about the numbers. I do like to be able to still power clean 300 pounds and things like that. That's cool for me, or be able to vertical jump, things like that, and have this little performance aspect. But for my whole thing is, I kind of want to look good and I want to feel good about myself. And my whole thing is, I go into my workouts and I push the pace, and my whole thing is trying to build work capacity. I think really most people should be their goal. If that's your goal, you're going to have a higher intensity workout. You're going to burn more calories during your workout. And that's the bottom line, right? I mean, we want to burn as many calories as we can in any exercise session. So whether I'm going to do that by going through my weights really, really hard, or doing a little bit of cardio first or whatever, that's kind of the end, you know, what I want to get to. So I'm doing it that way. It kind of works for me, and that's how I would prescribe. And that's what I did with this individual coach as well.
Right. Sounds good.
That's great.
We've exhausted our questions.
Before we go, I just want to send a huge thank you, as always, to Craig Ballantyne at TurbulenceTraining.com for sponsoring the show. It's TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. I still have not messed that up as much as John Williams has.
That was once. I still can't say it. I have like nightmares of screwing up that line.
It's like blowtorch muscle and boost body fat. I don't think that's what it was. But huge thank you to Craig. And again, Coach, it's been a huge, huge pleasure. And I think this might have been one of the best shows we've ever had. I just want to thank
you. No, it was my pleasure, guys.
And we're definitely going to have you on again in the future, especially when the book comes out next year. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. We've got to get I'm definitely going to pull Alan in on this next one. It's just, you know, I present with them. We've done a bunch of stuff together, and it's just so much easier. We spoke at NSCA in Las Vegas last summer, and I just feel so much. It's so easy, much easier for me to get stuff out, because when you're talking with Shrek next to you, it's like it's awesome. You know, he sounds so much smarter, and he's so witty and everything else. So
that might be one of the most dangerous shows we'll ever have.
No, it's great. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Oh,
but it's funny because of just kind of knowing him, I've got to meet so many of these other people that are really, really great, great trainers and stuff. Like, you know, great. I mean, Bill Hartman's like the smartest man on the planet. And yet, you know, I don't know, honestly, and I'm being totally sincere. I think that he, you know, I ask him a question in email, and he'll send me a reply, and I have no idea what he's even telling me. And I'll have to say, okay, you know, I do have a master's degree in this, but, you know, you got to dummy this down for me a little bit, you know, because he's helped me out, and he gave me a bunch of little kind of rehab kind of things for the book that I put in, little sidebar stuff. But, you know, like him and meeting him and meeting Boyle, and I got to, you know, hang out with Jason Ferrugia this weekend. And you talk about, these guys are bright, bright, bright guys, you know. So it's really neat. I mean, just knowing him and being able to kind of pick his brain, you know, on a weekly basis over a beer or whatever is kind of, it's been awesome. So I'm real thankful for that.
Definitely. I mean, I can't wait to have both you guys on. I'll definitely have to hype that up in the newsletter.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And I guess I'll pretty much wrap it up for this week's episode of the FitCast. FitCast episode number 31. As always, don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for the show notes. And I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And Dose is with us.
Oh, and I'm Robert Dose Medios. I didn't know if you guys.
I forgot to tell you. But
you thought I left. I was in the bathroom or something. No, I didn't know.
No, I thought I got cut off from you guys. I was like, am I talking to myself?
Well, again, thank you, Coach, so much for coming on. And we'll see everyone on thefakeass.com. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. Check us out on iTunes. Post some reviews. We'll see you next week.